Man 4, were the pilots enthusiastic about being in the workplace?
Oh, no, definitely not. They were on our side and must have passed the message on, because the Malthouse business was discontinued and we carried on in the normal way.
Did you ever see any evidence of defences against Zeppelins, anti-aircraft guns being fired?
Oh, well, yes. They had a kind of a half circle around Harwich Harbour of searchlights and guns. And this come under the control of the Commodore of the harbour, or of the port, Commodore Cayley. And he gave the order when to open up with searchlights and with the guns. And on one occasion, I was on the kind of standby when I had to get back from a visit to the town by 11 o'clock. I remember it so well, coming down from the lower part of Felixstowe to the station, when I heard a drone, a heavy drone, turning round in the darkness. I saw the envelope of a Zeppelin coming very low, around about 1,000 feet or less. And it was coming straight over the anti-aircraft gun, which was manned by the Bedford Regiment, in front of their camp, at the side of the road from the Felixstowe to the station. And I immediately got in the ditch. There was a ditch running with no water in it, as it happened, and right opposite this gun. And I could see them in their khaki overcoats standing round ready to fire when they got the order from Commodore Cayley. And this Zeppelin was going right by at this low altitude. And in my opinion, had they been able to fire without orders, they could have blown it sky high. But it had passed their gun when the order was given. The shrill siren whistle went up, the searchlights all came on, and the guns. And this Zeppelin, believe it or not, turned out towards the sea and went very nearly vertical, straight up, and was lost in the darkness before anybody's sights were really on it. Whether it was brought down or not later, I don't know. But I witnessed this. I was in the ditch right opposite. I was calling out to the gunners, "There's a Zepp, open fire," or something. And I said, "And you know, and I feel certain that we missed an opportunity there, because it was under this one control."
Have you got a lot more to do?
How did you come to leave Felixstowe?
Well, I had twice requested to go overseas. I was thinking of probably going to number 14 Fighter Squadron or Scout Squadron. But I was called one morning into Chief Petty Officer Fern's office. He was a jaunty of the station. And informed I had been drafted to Italy with the British Italian Airship Expeditionary Force. Well, I'd seen blimps, we call them silver cranes, and so on, but I didn't know anything about airships at all. So I was rather surprised at this. Anyway, shortly afterwards, I was measured for my khaki drill uniform, and eventually I received this and found myself on my way to Wormwood Scrubs to join the other members of the party, where the airships were also being collected prior to dispatch to Italy by rail.
They were dismantled before being...
Well, they'd been used in England, some of them. They'd been erected and used, as one of our officers had flown, one or two of them. One of our... who came to Italy with us.
Did you actually have to dismantle them, or was that
No. Some of the members were connected with that, yes, of our party, but I didn't. I didn't see them actually. I was at the scrubs and waiting instructions to go with the party to Italy when everything was ready. Now, while I was there, I received my inoculations twice, two inoculations, and I had to journey down to Roehampton to the balloon section for my passport. We had to have a passport. And the party consisted of three officers and 24 ratings of various ranks. Lieutenant Commander John Barron, a Canadian, whose father was a Canadian judge, was the CO. Lieutenant George Meagher and Engineer Officer Geoffrey Maund are NVR, with the other two officers. Apparently, the Admiralty had sold half a dozen of these SS ships to Italy, and our job was to rig them for flight, test them, and our officers instruct the Italian officers in flying. After several weeks at the scrubs, we were billeted out at the time, waiting for the first ships to be dispatched. We left by rail for Southampton.
Had you been on a course, an airship course?
Oh, no course. No, nothing of that. I was just drafted there. As I asked twice, I suppose, they said, well, this cropped up. They'd been asked to supply a man, and that... I was just the man. I was wanting to go somewhere abroad, and that was that.
So the first work you ever did on airships was when you started assembling them at
the far side. Oh, yes, definitely, yes. Yes. So, anyway, we were under the... Arriving at Southampton, we were under the charge of our senior chief petty officer. We crossed the channel to Le Havre, then by a slow passenger train for Paris, where we stayed 3 days. The first night we were billeted at a French barracks, and we had dinner on the same table with some of the staff of the American commander, general. I don't know whether it was Pershing or somebody like that, General Pershing. We had this meal. There was a vast difference between our meal, one end of the table, and Americans. The American staff sergeants had a Frenchman behind practically every one of them, waiting on. They'd just come in the war, 1917, and we were allowed to get on with it the best we could, sort of business, you see. We'd been in it long enough. Anyway, we didn't like the quarters there. It was Army three boards on trestles, the floor, and we found bugs and lice all over the show, in between the boards and so on. So we requested to be moved. Our chief petty officer was allowed to go and try and find the CO, who was somewhere in Paris. The other two officers were coming later, actually. And after finding him, we were marched across Paris in the early hours of the morning to one of the stations where we should depart for Italy from. There we slept the night in the tunnels that were being used as bedrooms and a canteen, and the next night, and then away we went on by ordinary passenger train via Modane to Rome. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we arrived eventually at Taranto. When we got to Taranto, our chief petty officer got moving around, got in touch with number 6 seaplane base headquarters, They didn't know anything about us. Got in touch with the mothership, the Queen, in Taranto Harbour.
That was the old battleship, wasn't it?
Yes. And they didn't know anything about us because we were actually going to be loaned to the Italian government and come under their control, messing and food and all that business, which we did. We had their food when we eventually got there, which consisted of goat flesh and macaronis of all descriptions, and octopus occasionally, and so on. Plenty of olive oil. Anyway,
were you disappointed with this food? Was there much complaints about it?
No, we got used to it. As a matter of fact, we did arrange that our lorry went back to the army base, which was next to the number 6 wing base, and picked up tins of Nestle milk. So occasionally we had a milky macaroni business without olive oil, you see, something that we were used to. Also tea, bring back some tea, and we used to have a cup of tea because it was all coffee and all that business. Yes. Yeah. So what would you like now? So anyway, we then slung our hammocks on the Queen until number 6 wing could provide tents for us in an olive grove, or whatever you like to call it. That was for the mechanics. We stayed there about 3 weeks, the reason being that our quarters at the Aeroscala, the Italian Aeroscala, which was naval, in the province of Lecce, near the village of Grattali, our quarters were not ready. So we stayed there 3 weeks until they were. Then, during that period, I got dysentery. But thank goodness I was one of the lucky ones that after a few days I cleared this dysentery, or was cleared by the local doctor, and I was back to normal.
Other people kept getting recurrences of it.
Yes, they? And some passed over with it. Yes, it was a serious thing, really. Well, eventually we arrived at Grattali, and we had our quarters where we slung our hammocks again in the naval way. It was a very fine station. It had a big shed for their M-class, which was something approaching a small Zepp type of airship. And we used the same shed for our blimps. Or these blimps had a BE two-seater fuselage, which we slung underneath, which had a 90 horsepower RAF engine and done about 45 miles per hour, actually. Well, our first ship arrived and we started and got on with the filling of the gas and one thing and another. The plant we found had to be cleaned out. We couldn't inflate in one go. Took two lots to inflate. That was from the bottles all lined up on under a shelter affair. And we then messed with the Italian naval ratings, NCOs and officers, all in the different messes. We, as I said, went on their food. We had quite a tight schedule. We were out very early in the morning. And as our ships were inflated, so they were flown in their personnel instructed. And eventually, we handed the lot over.
as each airship was completed, that one was handed over. Was it handed over airship by airship, or when the whole lot was done?
Airship by airship. And we deflated them and packed them in some cases. And they were sent to one of their bases. When our work was completed, we left at the end of January, actually the 29th, 1918. Stopping at Barry, we stopped at another place, beginning with a C, Comia or something like that, but we stopped at Barry, where we were issued with rations for our trip in a military troop train up the east coast of Italy, right across the country to the Riviera, and across France to Cherbourg. This took about 10 days and 9 nights. We arrived from Cherbourg to Southampton, and then on by train to the Crystal Palace. The Crystal Palace was then the drafting centre and all that for the Royal Naval Air Service. I'd never heard of it before we went out to Italy. One amusing thing there, we did have one little accident with an airship. A propeller was broken, and our Lieutenant George Meagher wanted to bring this home. We give him a hand, and we...